from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. In this hour, we take your questions about the effectiveness of physical distancing to slow the spread of the coronavirus and how to do it politely. But first, we look at how the state prison system is trying to avoid a mass outbreak of COVID-19 infections among inmates and staff. Already, 9 officers and 1 inmate have tested positive for the virus. We talk with the former head of the state's corrections department about why he sees prisons as a tinderbox of potential infection. We'll get started after this news. Welcome to statewide coverage of the coronavirus pandemic from KQED. I'm Mina Kim. State corrections officials say an inmate at a prison in Los Angeles County was the first in the state to test positive for COVID-19. At least 9 correctional officers at other prisons have also been diagnosed with the infection. As California officials scramble to contain the spread of the novel coronavirus, advocates are questioning whether enough is being done to protect the 120,000 people incarcerated in state prisons and the tens of thousands of staff members who work with them. To learn more, we're joined by Marisa Lago. She's politics correspondent for KQED. Hi, Marisa.
Hey, Mina.
Also with us is Scott Kernan, former secretary for the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Thanks for joining us, Scott Kernan.
Thank you for having me.
And I should note that both the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation and the Correctional Healthcare Services declined our request for an interview. But we're glad to have you here, Scott Kernan. And we know that prisoners are in close quarters that are not conducive to the distancing needed to slow coronavirus. But my sense is that's only part of the reason that you see prisons as a tinderbox of potential infection. What else should we know?
Well, just by the pure nature of prisons and what they do, the human density in our prisons is significant. Overcrowding is a problem across the system. And so keeping that isolation and separation is very, very challenging in the department. Then you put mentally ill patients in there and patients that are older with underlying conditions, and you have a real recipe for a problem.
And you mentioned overcrowding. We know that the state's overcrowding was particularly bad a few years ago. What is it at right now?
I believe it's about 134% of capacity. The capacity inside the prisons is around 88,000. But that's really deceiving in some ways, because that's the overall prison population. Many of the prisons are over 150, and a couple are even at 160% overcrowding today. Mm.
So that represents an average. So basically, you say the system was built for 88,000, but is holding probably more than 120,000 or so. And I think one of the things that people need to realize is that a lot of prisoners, if they do get sick, they actually do use our community hospital system, correct?
Yes, that's very true. That, hundreds of inmates are transferred every day into our local hospitals. And, I'm very aware that the department's taking all steps to try to minimize the impact on the community. But that's one of the concerns, that if the healthcare in our communities is overwhelmed, that will be cut off from the prisons and they will be left to deal with it of their own devices.
And Marisa Lagos, the numbers were updated today in terms of 9 staff members, officers who have been diagnosed positive for COVID-19. Where are these 9 correctional officers?
Yeah, so there are 3 at the California Institution for Men, 3 at California State Prison in Sacramento, 1 at Folsom State Prison, 1 at the California Healthcare Facility in Vacaville, and then another in Corcoran not at the state prison there, but at a substance abuse treatment facility near Corcoran. So it's outside of the prison walls. So kind of spread around.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The governor announced yesterday some measures to try to reduce the likelihood of a major outbreak at our prisons. Can you talk about some of the measures that are being put in place?
Yeah, so we have seen Newsom, I think this was Tuesday, issue an executive order essentially halting the transfer of inmates from county jails to state prisons to serve their sentences. And that also includes juvenile offenders. So nobody is going to be taken out of local juvenile halls and transferred to the Department of Juvenile Justice either. The governor says that, you know, this is aimed at not only protecting staff during transfers, but inmates in case anybody in that group would have, you know, has been exposed to COVID-19 and isn't aware of it. And, you know, I think that broadly we're seeing him look at things like also in that executive order, parole hearings. Essentially, he has told the parole board to put all hearings online and video in a video conference setting. They have until about April 13th to kind of sort out how to do this. And I think that that's going to be a really important area to watch, because one of the things we've been seeing from civil rights advocates is a call for much bigger releases than what we've seen so far. So they're asking, and not just in state prisons, but in county jails and in immigration facilities, for authorities to look at releasing people who are not high risk, who are not violent, who may have, you know, the ability to go home to somewhere and be safer than they might be in prison and less exposed. They also are calling on the governor to look at folks over 65, medically vulnerable, and really anyone they say who's set for probation release and or parole release, excuse me, in the next year or so. And so I think that if the board of parole hearings can get that up and running in a manner that, of course, is not just fair to inmates, but to victims and to prosecutors and all the other players in the system, you know, we'll see if they're able to sort of up the number of possible releases. But as of now, we haven't seen the governor do anything to, like, do mass releases, for example.
Though we have had some Bay Area counties do this, right? The jails do this. Can you describe some of those efforts and how they've been making those decisions?
Yeah, we've seen, I believe, in Los Angeles and Santa Clara County, essentially low-level offenders. I mean, the thing to understand about jails is that most of the people in there are not going to be there for a very long time anyway. And so I think that it's, you know, and we also know that in California, even with our efforts at lowering bail amounts and doing other things around pretrial, that most jails are largely packed with people awaiting trial, not people who have been found guilty. So what we've seen, sort of a smattering of efforts, every county obviously is different and has its own board of supervisors and sheriff, but in some places they have started looking at really trying to get as many of those lower level folks out, people who maybe are waiting trial but don't have a lot of sort of red flags around their public safety issues. And so that is something that I think advocates would like to see much larger scale, but is happening particularly in places like LA where the jails are already pretty crowded.
Yes, though with this new order to halt intake, it sounds like those prisoners will have to remain in county custody if they were going to be transferred to the prisons.
Yeah, and I'm not clear if that's going to be, Scott might have a better sense, but I don't think that's going to be such a huge number of people that we're talking about, especially with most trials on hold right now. I'm not sure that that's going to cause like overcrowding problems. I do think it causes other questions in terms of how you classify people, and because, you know, if you're going to state prison, you're probably, you are serving time for a felony. But, you know, I think the bigger question here is like the ability to keep sort of calm and rest in any institution when you've taken away programs, you've taken away schools, potentially you've limited the ability to do things like substance abuse and other mental health treatment. How does the inmate population react, especially if they're locked down? I mean, we're all going a little crazy being locked down in our very comfortable homes. Imagine spending 24 hours a day in a cell or in a dormitory setting, which is the way a lot of these prisons and jails are still set up.
We're talking with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED, and Scott Kernan, former secretary of California's Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. We're talking about the potential for a coronavirus outbreak in California state prisons, and we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about how coronavirus could spread in prisons? Do you have an experience with incarcerated people accessing health care? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your questions or comments on Facebook, Twitter, at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Scott Kernan, on this point that Marisa was making about how prisons right now, to try to slow the spread, have canceled things like in-person visits, rehabilitative and educational programs. I mean, what impact does that have on inmates?
There's no doubt, given the extent of the emergency, that these steps were bold and needed to be taken just for the inmates' health. And I couldn't agree more that stopping intake into the prisons was the absolute right decision. And in coordination with the sheriffs, I think that it will be a small number, as was mentioned, and not a huge impact. I think the bigger concern is that the inmates, as was mentioned, are fearful, just like all of us are. So is the staff. And so you have, you know, a significant amount of unknown. And that always creates a volatile situation in the prison environment. To my understanding, at least what's publicly available, the secretary and the governor are taking significant steps to try to reduce it. And I know that they're grappling with the idea of reducing density by letting people out early. It's a tough decision to make. It might even be medically contraindicated to put inmates that don't have a stable home to go to or health care. You don't want to put people on the street and in our emergency rooms right now. So I think they're grappling with a very tough issue. But the department has taken steps beyond that to, you know, question all staff coming in, take temperatures. They're literally doing everything they possibly can to mitigate the impact at hand. So it's a very perplexing problem for corrections officials across the country right now.
And there was also this interesting BuzzFeed piece, Scott Kernan, that inmates are often reluctant to say that they don't feel well because of the isolation they're often placed in, which, you know, causes them to lose out on whatever privileges may have been available to them. Is that a widespread problem?
It very much is. I mean, the reality is that you're going to have, and there are cases right now happening where inmates are sick and they're not self-identifying because of the implications of such notification. So it is a problem that will continue across the country.
Well, let me, Marisa, you wanted to jump in a second.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that I credit CDCR, I think, for being pretty transparent right now. They've been posting on their website the places that staff members have tested positive, and they've just created in the last few days a status tracker where you can actually see how many folks within the system, inmates, have been tested, have been confirmed, have recovered or died. Nobody's recovered or died because we only have one. But, you know, they're telling us that we've had 167 tests so far. You know, that's like 0.1% of the prison populations. So I think it's great and they're doing a good job. I think just like the community, though, there are open questions about whether we're catching everything yet. And I think that, you know, that's a testing question and that's much bigger than our prison system.
Well, let me go to caller David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Join us.
Good morning. Hey, I had a quick question. I understand the prisons are also dealing with the same testing delays that outside providers are experiencing, where they're having to wait 4 or 5 days for tests to come back. And I was wondering, is there any way the governor could use his relationships with the corporate sector to get access to some of those point-of-care machines like the Cepheid machine so that they could quickly identify which prisoners are potentially affected and more effectively isolate them?
Well, Scott Kernan, can you give us more information about the testing protocols and the options for the governor?
I know that they have tested, I think, 116 offenders out of 120,000, and they have the one confirmed case and the 9 staff cases that were previously mentioned. So they're just in the infancy of that. I think the testing, kits and how we all are worried about getting it has not reached the prisons where they're doing widespread testing. I think they're only testing people that are showing symptoms right now.
Well, Marisa, I mean, it's such a fragile system. I know the federal government is running the healthcare system through a receivership, but is the prison healthcare system equipped to handle a wide-scale outbreak?
Scott can talk to this, too. I mean, they've had outbreaks in the prisons. We've seen Valley Fever. They, you know, had to deal with the H1N1 outbreak. I think that depending on...
So they have experience with this, you're saying?
They do. And Scott and I talked the other day about the contingencies that they plan. I mean, this is not something that is unheard of, right? The idea of an outbreak in prisons. To your point, I mean, the reason the medical system was a focal point of the overcrowding lawsuit and injunction was that basically that the population overcrowding was leading to this inadequate medical care. They didn't have the facilities, the beds, the staff to treat this, and to, you know, put people necessarily in places if they're crowded and, you know, triple bunks. It's been improved. We do have a brand new medical facility out there in Vacaville that I've been to. But as Scott mentioned, I mean, a lot of these folks, if it's something super serious, will end up in the community anyway, because that's just where the bigger health safety net is. You know, there is an interesting side. The sheriff in San Francisco pointed out to me that, you know, for some indigent inmates and people like that, they might be getting better health care in jails or prisons than they are on the street. But I don't think that that is necessarily the case. And I think in a state like California, where we have expanded Medi-Cal so aggressively, there are options in the community. But I think that there's a real question both in the community and in the prisons about our capacity to deal with this. And that's just and I think within that context, we almost have to not think about these as different populations, but consider that these inmates are part of our state and part of our overall numbers.
Well, let me go to caller Isabel in Sacramento. Hi, Isabel.
I just had a comment and concern. I was incarcerated in Sacramento County and in Yolo County a couple years ago. And like countless times I saw just the lack of care or like attention to inmates. And I just have a lot of fear towards how that's going to affect or how that is going to correlate with this virus.
Yes.
There's been a couple times where a friend of mine had a seizure in her cell, and then it was like an hour and a half before they actually came and attended to her.
Well, Isabel, let me
lack of, yeah.
Yeah, let me get Scott Kernan to respond to your concern. Scott Kernan, any thoughts for Isabel and her concerns about how COVID-19, I mean, I know that Marisa was saying that disease outbreaks have happened before and that the prisons have a system to deal with it, but COVID-19 feels different.
Well, let me just, you know, emphasize that point. I think we're dealing with something that we've never dealt with before, and that's the concerning part. I completely agree, and throughout my career, we dealt with various outbreaks, as was mentioned. And so I think they have a very solid infectious disease program within the prisons. They have to. But the concern here is that, like everywhere in the country, in all of our healthcare, could it be overwhelmed? And I certainly think it could. Most of these prisons have, you know, very few negative pressure rooms. They're going to have to put sick people in open situations. You know, we have dorms of 100 people sharing restrooms. The bars, you know, many of the prisons, especially the older prisons, have bar construction where there is no physical barrier. So it is just a significant problem. But let me say this. The health care in California has been improved significantly. I think the dollar value was something about $2 billion a year when I left. So they have tried to improve it. That's not to say that you're not going to have instances like your caller mentioned and hear those kind of concerning stories. But the health care has significantly improved within the Department of Corrections in the last several years.
Well, this listener, Ted, writes, the state prison system has spent millions of dollars on reducing what's become a crisis of inmate drug overdoses in recent years. Are you concerned that the agency's new rules on restricting movement inside prisons could hinder any progress the state is making on the issue? Will inmates not get therapy they need or the medications they need on this? Scott Kernan?
Well, I think all the programs, given the, you know, catastrophic disaster that they're dealing with, have been canceled or impacted, and there's certainly going to be impacts to that. And it's true that there's you know, a significant amount of drugs still in prison, and there's going to be problems with that as well. But I think to answer your question directly, I think all the programs that are non-essential have been curtailed significantly inside the prisons, as they should be.
Well, let me go next to caller Rob in Albany. Hi, Rob. Join us.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I used to be a literacy tutor at the Glenn Dyer Jail in Oakland prior to its closure. And one thing I noticed is that a lot of inmates are reliant on friends and family members actually coming to the facility to put money on their commissary. Their family's not able to do it remotely. For one reason or another. And I'm wondering if, you know, this crisis has given anyone any ideas as to how to adjust the commissary system to better accommodate inmates during this time.
Rob, thanks for the question. Marisa, do you have any idea?
I mean, I know that they are trying to be really careful about who's coming in and out. So that is definitely part of what we're hearing is being tracked. I mean, you know, one of the challenges anytime of covering the prison system is that we only know what we're told often, right, on the outside. And so I do think it can be difficult. And I apologize. There's a car alarm behind me because I'm in my garage.
Yes, we are all remotely broadcasting. So that also is what comes with the territory.
You know, I was just getting some text from someone I know who works in jail healthcare. And she was pointing out a couple of things. One of them is that some of the counties that earlier caller talked about, Yolo and Sacramento, may actually have for-profit healthcare systems operating in their jails, which is a little different than what some counties do. And then also just like the coordination, I think we kind of touched on this, but between, you know, the county jails and state prisons and the healthcare systems on the outside, I think that is going to be a really key component moving forward, that there is open lines of communication and that there's an understanding within the broader health system of what's happening inside of these institutions as it happens.
Well, Scott Kernan, Marisa mentioned earlier that inmate advocates are requesting that the Attorney General basically direct all sheriffs to release people who have 6 months or less on their sentences. You know, Governor Gavin Newsom is talking about wanting to make sure that he's balancing that with public safety. Is there a good way to do this, and is this the right way to go?
Well, if there's a good way, I think the governor's going to find it. I think he's trying hard to balance that. You know, he's very public about, I don't want to make another problem and let out thousands of inmates and flood the healthcare systems and, you know, the problems that could be associated with that. So I think they're trying to do it smart. I think that the advocates asking for thousands of inmates to just be released without a plan does not make sense at all to me. These inmates cannot just be let out on the streets. And again, they may be past the time horizon for the department to really act. So you're going to put sick people out that have been infected in the community and for them to be spread. So I think that's the kind of significant, challenging decisions the governor and the secretary are working through. And I have every faith that they're going to do what's best for the inmates and the staff that are working on prisons.
But ultimately, you believe an outbreak is inevitable.
I do. And I fear that it could be a very significant one, given at least what I've understood, how contagious this disease is. Nobody's dealt with anything like this at all. And the real question is going to be, can the prison system marshal its resources and make these decisions? And again, not to belabor it, I think that they're doing everything they possibly can right now. And the issue of density reduction is an important question that I think the governor and the secretary are going to have to deal with very quickly.
Scott Kernan, former secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent and co-host of KQE's Political Breakdown, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Mina.
And thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. We'll talk social or physical distancing after the break. Stay with us.